97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, college football players expressing solidarity. Joining us to weigh in on that subject, Sonny Vaccaro, best known for signing Michael Jordan to his first shoe contract, and more recently, for his criticism of the NCAA. He's joining us from California. And here in our studio, John Sweeney, distinguished professor of sports communication at UNC Chapel Hill, who has done promotional work for the Olympics, the NBA, and the NCAA. During the third week of the college football season, gentlemen, a number of players displayed the letters APU somewhere on their uniforms. APU stands for All Players United. Sonny, what does that mean? Explain what are they united about?
Well, I think the purpose of this particular, you know, situation is and probably will be that the players are sort of forming together as a balanced unit. We've had fragments of players speaking out in the past. We've had individual comments coming from just an interview in the newspaper, in a magazine, and they force their opinion that they feel that as time's gotten on, they've realized the misbalance in the players being involved, players being considered more on a financial avenue, and also on, you know, more serious things to some individuals on the injuries. They are finally getting to the point in 2013 that they feel the comfort to speak out about some of the things that are happening within the structure of the NCAA, which don't always benefit the athletes.
John, your take about players wearing this one symbol.
Well, it's fascinating the amount of publicity two quarterbacks and five players on wearing a little wristband. And it shows you how tightly clamped the world of the NCAA has been. And so it's interesting that that small little protest, if you will, got so much attention.
And that sort of reminds me of the Olympics when the black athletes gave the power symbol. It was just two athletes, but it was such a powerful symbol. Sonny, is there any is that a good metaphor?
Well, it is, but it's a little bit more illogical because obviously the three guys that took the stand at that time, they knew there was racial injustice. They knew there were other things that were more important than just the Olympics. But it was a stand for, you know, basically an African American cause at that particular time, and it became significant because there's not a bigger stage in the world with or without the mass media we have today than we had in the 50s and the 60s because of the Olympics, which was to me the most egregious group of individuals controlling a group of people in my lifetime, other than a war situation, obviously.
John, Sonny mentions control, and that's something that you alluded to, the control that the NCAA has on these athletes.
Yeah, very much so. And the fact that they have basically allowed this. On their website, they said it was interesting and okay for them to be making these statements. And I would say two or three years ago, that might have been different. They're very, very clear that it's a privilege for players to play for them. And I think the media has been, with the shame of college athletics in Atlantic and Time Magazine, players should be paid kind of articles, have really prepared the ground a little for this protest. So they can't really do anything but accept it.
Sonny, you have been an outspoken critic of the hypocrisy of the NCAA. What do you mean?
Well, you know, I've been someone who's gone through the whole, you know, the whole thing. I mean, I started in the 60s, really, when Walter Byers was running it. So I'm one individual who's still living that can talk about the rise of commercialism. And I'm probably the one individual that'll, you know, speak out about it, that's been on the side of the commercialism, since I obviously was a major part of what Nike did in the 70s, and which sort of started do these things. So when my advocacy comes from years of watching it. Now, then some people are going to say, because they don't know Sonny Vaccaro, they don't even know what the hell this is about. But, you know, what I also saw, though, what the public doesn't accept until just recently, in the last, months, when people like Taylor Branch and Don Nocera and Lowell Bergman, and, this is what's happened. The exposure has come from a part of the community, the media community, that is almost without sin. What I say is these people are giants in their field, and they're actually, they weren't advocating, they were asking questions why things happen. And it's quite different when you reach over in America to the other side, and the other side being someone who really is only expressing an opinion of what they think is happening. To go back to John and the word control, and go back to Sonny Vaccaro, well, I've watched the control, get bigger and bigger and bigger, because, no one said anything when in 77 and 78 and Nike and I went out and we gave coaches money to wear shoes. I mean, there wasn't, in fact, the NCAA and all their other people who worked under the umbrella of this group, sort of made me a hero. And all I did was a business deal, basically. And as it got on and it got bigger and we went from just being Nike to other shoe companies, the monies are way out of control. So what has now happened is the players are much more aware. Other than getting a free pair of shoes and a sweatsuit in the 70s and 80s, they're now seeing that, there's so much money being made by people. Again, if you really inspect the O'Bannon case, the money's being made, by companies such as Nike and Adidas and Reebok. They're the easiest one to identify. The shoe industry is so connected to, amateur athletes and all athletes. They are the mother hand of all sports. And they are now saying, well, this is fine. We enjoy it. We enjoy wearing those shoes and drinking those products and all that stuff. But it's gotten now where the public has seen more of the individual athletes. And one of the things that really galls me is when something goes wrong, the athlete's name lives in infamy forever. If he happens to do something or whatever, in a school and he's branded something or other, then his name, and the school just keeps living merrily on. You know that. The ivy and the walls never come down. They just keep growing. But that individual, we've seen where they've taken down the banners, we've taken away Heisman trophies, you can't be a part of it, we can't put your number up on a wall for 55 years after death. All these hypocritical, stupid, for an intelligent group of people, rules of punishment to the athlete. Interesting. So I hope I answered that, but that's how I felt. I watched the growth of the money, and the players are now being more educated, and there are more people around them. And it's not just the money thing. This is not about paying thing. This is about being fair. And it all comes out of one word. The NCAA has a beautiful partner in a word that the public doesn't even really understand. Amateurism. It's a ridiculous word pertaining to this group of individuals, athletes.
Our guests are Sonny Vaccaro and John Sweeney here on Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus with our guests John Sweeney and Sonny Vaccaro. John, before the break, Sonny was talking about amateurism and how that word, it just doesn't even really work for describing what is college athletics today. Your take on that?
Well, amateurism grew out of the elite classes and the 1800s, trying to keep the non-elites out of sports. So it's been a trouble word from the get-go. The world of college sports in the 60s and 70s, the money was of such a different scale than what it is today, with the contracts, the branding of license, the sponsorships, and all the rest of it. And so as the amount of money exploded, obviously, the question of what a star quarterback should get becomes far more troubling. And what's fair compensation to a team that fills 100,000 seats at $100 a shot with major sponsors, with major networks, is a whole different thing than what it used to be. The other side of it, though, is that the NCAA is also supporting a bunch of nonprofit sports. And so the question of how that money flows in and out of football and basketball and then takes care of everybody else makes it complicated.
Sonny, when we hear about these players banding together and you know the thought of will that lead to unionization, it would be troublesome to some people because we've seen player lockouts, player strikes in the professional leagues. What would keep something like that from happening in college sports if these players were to band together in some sort of union?
See, your key phrase was it would be troublesome to the other parts of the public. And they really should have no concern about what it is, personally, my own opinion. Because why is it? Because we are now signifying and putting a label on these athletes as saying they shouldn't do it for the purity of the sport. They shouldn't do it for the purity of the schools. And my answer to that, and this is sort of where I get into, you know, in the barbed wire, is the sense that there is no logical reason for anyone to be disrupted or feel bad about kids being treated fairly. And when you brought up, you know, all the other things that come about from what the NCAA supposedly does or does not do with all the money generated by the two sports entities, football and basketball, is not entirely true, because the public has an ill-conceived perception that the NCAA funds everybody. They fund this, they fund that, they fund the girls, they fund the boys, they fund, you know, rowing and squash and everything else. And basically, that's not basically true. All those kids don't get scholarships. All those kids in the football and basketball team don't get scholarships. We know that. It's a walk-on. And the scholarship money is the trickiest thing that the public has no idea that they talk about. The scholarship money, this isn't like when you go work in the coal mine, you come on, they give you your money, then you got to go to the grocery store and you got to pay bills. Well, the university doesn't do that. They charge these kids money for sitting in a seat in a building they already own. So if that seat is occupied or not occupied, it doesn't take any revenue out of them. Now, obviously, when they pay their own selves, because that's what they're doing, they're paying with the scholarship money that they have put aside because of the revenues of the football and the basketball team. So kid A sits in seat 10 in your class. Well, if he wasn't there, seat 10, you know, there's no cost. There's no one's coming in putting new sheets and towels in there. So it's a fallacy even to think. Some of the terms that they give you, this is $50,000 a year, it's worth $250,000. Well, you know what? Let's allow this to happen. That individual, the one you made up, you know, the star quarterback, or trying to divide the line with who could get whatever. Then I asked something that I asked in the 90s many times, just off the hand, because I was so involved with the shoe companies, and the kids were signing unbelievable shoe contracts coming out of high school at that time. In the 90s, when it really broke the dam, when kids didn't even go to college. And Kobe Bryant said to me, Mr. Vaccaro, he said, if I would have gone to school A, B, or C, would I have been allowed to, you know, sign and, you know, and make the shoe contract? If I would have, maybe I would have gone to school A, B, C. And he said that just, you know, I think we were at the press conference. He was 18 years old. And you know, and it hit me for the first time. Well, you aren't allowed. But isn't that interesting? He asked that. If they were allowed, he could have gotten the money. Maybe he would have gone to college. And that's what all this BS is about, because they want these kids to go to college and play the games and sell them to the contracts, which is fine with me. Which is fine, but they could have put the money in escrow. So to answer your question, the misnomer that they so successfully win with the public is, you know, they fund everybody. They fund nobody. They fund who they want to. I mean, the lacrosse kids, the fencing, the ones you allude to, and true thing, your statement is correct. I want you to show me where every player, every fencer, or every rower on their school at the North Carolina, if they have those sports, is getting funded fully. They get 1/10 scholarship, 1/4 scholarship, 1/99 scholarship. They get a book to go to a class scholarship. That's bull crap.
John, I wanted to ask your take about the if some would be concerned that this might lead to college players unionizing. Should that be a concern?
No, I think it's a long way from having that kind of organization. I think there's going to be some kind of movement to more fairly compensate athletes in the commercial sports. I don't think it's going to take on all players locked together, because there's just too much institutional pressure against the players for that. This is allowing some armbands, and it's getting national attention. I mean, the NCAA has got a lock on this, and so do the institutions that support the NCAA, and they're very paternal, and they're very disciplining, and it's going to be a slog to go to a union. To make some progress, yes, I think that's going to happen.
Sunday, when I read the NC2A response to the All Players United effort, I thought, that's kind of weak. I've covered the NC2A for a long time, and it's like I've seen the NC2A much more forceful than that, and it was almost like they're running scared.
Well, I think what you're saying, and I'll say from my own words, I understand exactly what you said. It was, and it was surprising to me, this guy who, would have certainly gotten calls on it. I thought it was, it was a meek lamb. There's no question about it. It was a statement that basically the only statement they can cover themselves with and get rid of a statement and go on to the next story the next day was, you're free to do what you want. They tell the world that they're free to do what they want. Well, they certainly aren't. They look at their rule book. They're not free to do a lot of things that they're forced to, join by simply signing the damn scholarship. So that's not a true statement. They're free. But that was just like, listen, they can do anything one. Well, they didn't talk anything about being owning your own logo until Johnny Manziel created the biggest stir in the world this summer when people were stealing his logo, and they said, well, you can do it, but as long as you use it and you're gone, all that sort of stuff. They've sort of been answering on the fly. And gentlemen and audience, in my opinion, until the O'Bannon case, the NCAA for all these 100 years, especially, as Mr. Sweeney said, especially going through when the money started progressing, they've owned the last press conference with the media. They owned the last word. No one ever had a response. So what you are seeing today is a response from various individuals, various, other groups, to a thing that happened. And this is what O'Bannon gave to these players and everything else. However that does or does not, he's not legally in court yet. But the whole point, there's been so much said because there's been so much exposure to the NCAA. At first, they always come on, the first time, O'Bannon filed, it was going to be dismissed in 1 minute. I mean, so I'm not going to go into that. That's not about this case, this story here. But now the players are giving, or somebody that believes like the players, are getting a chance to answer the question. So now what did you do? Do you go back to NCAA and ask them the same question when they said everyone can do? No, because they can't have an answer. They don't have an answer. They don't have the last word at the press conference anymore. And I really feel good about that. That's what happens. The last word at the press conference usually sticks in the public's mind.
We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus with our guests John Sweeney and Sonny Vaccaro. We're talking about football players uniting together. John, we've mentioned the O'Bannon case several times, and without getting down into the weeds about the O'Bannon case, it's essentially the NC2A has been able to profit off the likeness of athletes, both current and former. The APU situation, All Players United, I think would be maybe a flash in the pan taken by itself. But alongside the O'Bannon case and several other things that the NC2A is facing now, it seems like the institution is, as I said earlier, running scared.
The institution has been cornered by a whole series of forces getting publicity. As long as it can stay behind the scenes and do institutional controls, I don't think you're going to see some great renaissance of freedom going through it. But they'll make whatever public moves they have to make to maintain as much control as they can.
Sonny, is that your take?
Well, I think Mr. Sweeney is absolutely correct about his premise on what they want to do, what they want to control, because as long as they can stay going, it'll maintain the same. The irony here, and I'll close it with this, okay? This thing could have been talked about much briefer. I'm talking about the O'Bannon case itself. But the very nonsense of these people writing that, you know, proverbial line in the sand, we will never do anything. We will never do anything. Well, if the public would just stop in 10 seconds and listen to what I have to say after this program, I say it's interesting, all they're looking for, they're already saying delays, delays, Supreme Court, all these out clauses in their minds, in their contract with these players. And they're saying we'll just go all the way. The only one that makes money on this, just so we understand this, the only ones that make money if the games continue are the people who run the sport, the commissioners of all the big conferences, the NCAA itself and their 10,000 employees and their mausoleum in Indianapolis, the only ones, and the lawyers they've had who have made millions and millions of dollars. You have to understand that. It serves these individuals and these groups of people to keep the games going. When one logical person would sit down instead of, you know, when you're going to divide the baby up and you say, okay, we got to do something here. I have not heard from anybody, coaches or people, because the NCAA certainly doesn't agree to it, to sit down and say, what will it take to make this a level playing field? That's all I've asked when I started this, when I've rooted for the O'Bannon case, when I've made my other speeches around the country. Why can't they just do something and meet off campus and say, this can work? This isn't like some mathematical equation to go to the moon or Mars or something. This is to compensate people when they're no longer there, whether it's images or concussions or whatever the hell it is. They won't do it. Isn't that interesting, public?
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. My thanks to our guests, Sonny Vaccaro and John Sweeney. Thanks also to producer Justin Blankenship and to engineer Gary Kirk. Thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.